Edwin Owen and Patrick Allen in the third episode of Jane Eyre, adapted by Barbara Cooper from the novel by Charlotte Bronte. The events of that moonlit night, when the house party at Thornfield Hall had been roused by an unearthly cry, and the subsequent strange and lonely vigil which Jane Eyre had passed, tending to the wants of Mr. Rochester's wounded friend, Mason, were scarcely died down when, on the afternoon of the following day, Jane was summoned downstairs by a message that someone wanted to see her in Mrs. Fairfax's room.
Well, who is it? You've not quite forgotten me, I think, Miss Jane.
Betty! Oh, Betty! Betty! Oh, how glad I am to see you.
And I you, Miss. This is my little boy.
Oh, then you're married, Betty.
Nearly 5 years since, to Robert Leven, the coachman. He's brought me over now. You're not grown so very tall, Miss Jane. Not so very stout.
I'm afraid you're disappointed in me, Betty.
Oh, no, Miss Jane, not exactly. You're genteel enough. You look like a lady, and it's as much as I ever expected of you. You were no beauty as a child, but I dare say you're very clever now. I always knew you'd surpass the Reeds in learning.
How do they all get on, Betty? Tell me everything about them. Come, sit here. Tell me of my aunt, of John, Eliza, and Georgiana.
I'm sorry I can't give you good news of them, miss. They're in great trouble. That's what's brought me here.
Oh, Betty. I hope no one is dead.
Mr. John, a week yesterday at his chambers in London.
Mr. John?
Yes.
And how did his mother bear it?
Well, you see, Miss Eyre, his life has been very wild. These last 3 years he gave himself up to strange ways. And his death was shocking. They say he killed himself.
Bessie! Oh, what dreadful news.
Mrs. Reed had been out of health for some time, and the manner of Mr. John's death came too suddenly. It brought on a stroke.
Oh.
She was 3 days without speaking. And then it seemed as if she wanted to tell us something. She kept making signs and mumbling. At last we made out the words. Bring Jane. Fetch Jane Eyre. I want to speak to her. And so Miss Georgiana and Miss Eliza and myself thought to send for you. And if you can come, miss, Robert and I would like to take you back with us early tomorrow morning.
Yes, Bessie, I shall be ready. It seems to me that I ought to go.
I think so too, miss. I suppose you'll have to ask leave before you can get off.
Yes, and I will do it now. And, Bessie, I will send Leah to look after you and Robert and your little boy.
Thank you, miss.
And I went in search of Mr. Rochester. I asked Mrs. Fairfax if she'd seen him. She believed he was playing billiards with Miss Ingram. To the billiard room I hastened. The click of balls and the hum of voices resounded thence. It required some courage to disturb so interesting a party, but I approached my master where he stood at Miss Ingram's side.
If you please, Mr. Rochester.
Oh, it's the governess again. What do you want? Is he never to be left in peace?
I am afraid I must speak to Mr. Rochester, just for a moment.
Oh, hello. What is it?
I think this person wants you.
Oh. Come in here, then. Well, Jane?
If you please, sir, I want leave of absence for a week or two.
Oh, what to do? Where to go?
To see a sick lady who sent for me.
What sick lady? Where does she live?
At Gateshead.
Well, that's 100 miles off. Who may she be that sends for people to see her that distance?
Her name is Reed, sir. Mrs. Reed.
Mrs. Reed of Gateshead, a magistrate.
It is his widow, sir.
And what have you to do with her?
Mr. Reed was my uncle. My mother's brother.
The deuce he was. You never told me that before. Well, Jane, how long will you stay?
As short a time as possible, sir.
Promise only to stay a week?
I'd better not pass my word. I might be obliged to break it.
Well, you can't travel without money. I've given you no salary yet. How much have you in the world, Jane?
5 shillings, sir.
Oh, indeed. Here, take this note.
But this is for £50, sir. And you owe me but 15. I have no change.
I don't want change, you know that. Take your wages.
I will not accept anything more than is my due, sir.
Right. Right, better not give you all now. You'd perhaps stay away 3 months if you had £50. There are 10. Is it not plenty?
Yes, sir. But now you owe me 5.
Come back for it, then. I am your banker for £40.
Mr. Rochester, I may as well mention another matter of business to you while I have the opportunity.
Matter of business? I'm curious to hear it.
You have as good as informed me, sir, that you are shortly going to be married.
Yes? What then?
In that case, sir, Adele ought to go to school.
To get her out of my bride's way, who might otherwise walk over her rather too emphatically. There's some sense in that suggestion, not a doubt of it. Adele, as you say, must go to school, and you, of course, must march straight to the devil?
I hope not, sir. But I must seek another situation somewhere.
And old Madam Reed will be solicited by you to seek a place, I suppose?
No, sir. I am not on such terms with my relatives as would justify me in asking favours of them. But I shall advertise.
You shall walk up the pyramids of Egypt. At your peril, you advertise. I wish I'd only offered you a sovereign instead of £10. Give me back £9, Jane. I have a use for it.
And so have I, sir.
Little niggard. Give me £5, Jane.
Not 5 shillings, sir. Nor 5 pence.
Just let me look at the cash.
No, sir. You are not to be trusted.
Jane.
Sir?
Promise me one thing. Not to advertise and to trust this quest of a situation to me. I'll find you one in time.
I shall be glad to do so, sir. If you, in your turn, will promise that I and Adele shall be both safe out of the house before your bride enters it.
Very well. Very well, I'll pledge my word on it.
I reached Gateshead at 5 o'clock in the afternoon of the 1st of May. I met Bessie in the hall, and she assured me that Mrs. Reed wished to see me at once. I hastened to her and softly opened the bedroom door. A nurse rose quietly from a chair by the bedside and left the room. I leant over the high-piled pillows. The well-known face was there, stern, relentless as ever. There was that peculiar eye which nothing could melt. How often it had lowered on me menace and hate. And yet, I stooped down and kissed her.
Is this Jane Eyre?
Yes, Aunt Reed. How are you, dear aunt?
Let go my hand.
You have sent for me, and I am here. And it is my intention to stay till I see how you get on.
I wish you to stay till I can talk some things over with you I have on my mind. There was something I wished to... let me see. Sit up. Don't annoy me with holding the clothes fast. Are you Jane Eyre?
I am Jane Eyre.
I have had more trouble with that child than anyone would believe. Such a burden to be left on my hands. She talked to me once like something mad, like a fiend. No child ever spoke or looked as she did. What did they do with her at Lowood Institution? They had fever there once, and many girls died, but Jane did not. I said she did. I wish she had died.
A strange wish, Mrs. Reed. Why do you hate her so?
I had a dislike to her mother always. my husband's only sister. She made a low marriage, and when she died, Reed sent for the baby. He pitied it. I hated it the first time I set my eyes on it. A sickly, pining thing. I'm come to a strange pass. I have heavy troubles. John is sunk and degraded. His look is frightful. I dream sometimes that I see him laid out with a swollen, blackened face. Who are you? You're quite a stranger to me. Where is Bessie?
She's in the kitchen, Aunt.
Aunt? Who calls me Aunt? Oh, yes. Yes, I know you. You are like... Oh, why, you're like Jane Eyre.
Dear Aunt, do not be so troubled. I am indeed Jane Eyre.
Is the nurse here? Oh, is there no one in the room but you?
No, we are alone, Aunt.
Well, I have done you a wrong which I regret now. Listen, Jane. Go to my dressing case. There, and take out a letter. Go. Have you found it?
Yes, Aunt.
Read it.
Very well. Madam, will you have the goodness to send me the address of my niece, Jane Eyre? For I desire her to come to me at Madeira. Providence has blessed my endeavors to secure a competency. And as I am unmarried and childless, I wish to adopt her during my life and bequeath her at my death whatever I may have to leave. John Eyre, Madeira. Why did I never hear of this, Aunt?
Because I disliked you too fixedly. I could not forget your conduct to me, Jane. The fury with which you turned on me. I felt fear, as if an animal that I had struck had looked up at me with human eyes and cursed me in a man's voice.
Dear Mrs. Reed, think no more of all this. Let it pass away from your mind. Forgive me. I was a child then. 8, 9 years have passed since that day.
I tell you, I could not forget it. I took my revenge. I wrote to John Eyre and told him you had died of typhus fever at Lowood.
Oh.
Now, actors, you please, expose my falsehood as soon as you like.
If you could be persuaded to think no more of it, Aunt, and to regard me with kindness and forgiveness.
No. Keep away. You away. You oppress me by leaning over the bed.
Aunt, please.
No. You were born, I think, to be my torment. My last hour is racked by the recollection of a deed which, but for you, I should never have been tempted to commit.
Love me then, or hate me as you will. You have my full and free forgiveness. Ask now for God, and be at peace.
Oh,
yes, Aunt. Come. Let
At 12 o'clock that night, she died. I was not present to close her eyes, nor were either of her daughters. Mr. Rochester had given me but 1 week's leave of absence, yet a month elapsed before the family affairs were settled and I was able to leave Gateshead. I was going back to Thornfield. But how long was I to stay there? I had not notified Mrs. Fairfax the exact day of my return, for I did not wish the carriage to meet me at Milcote. I proposed to walk the distance quietly by myself. They are making hay in Thornfield Meadows, now at the hour I arrive. I have but a field or two to traverse, and then I shall cross the road and reach the gates. I pass a tall briar, shooting leafy and flowery branches across the path. I see the narrow stile with the stone steps, and I see Mr. Rochester sitting there. Every nerve I have is unstrung. I did not think I should tremble in this way when I saw him. I will go back. I know another way to the house.
Hello! There you are. And this is Jane Eyre. Are you coming from Milcote and on foot? Yes, just one of your tricks. And what the deuce have you done with yourself this last month?
I have been with my aunt, sir, who is dead.
A true Janian reply. Ah, good angel, be my guard. She comes from the abode of people who are dead and tells me so when she meets me alone here in the gloaming. Absent from me a whole month and forgetting me quite all this while.
No doubt we've both been busy, sir. I hear you've had much to do in London.
Yes. I suppose you found that out by second sight.
Mrs. Fairfax told me in a letter.
And did she inform you what I went to do?
She said you were gone to make arrangements for your wedding. And that you talked of purchasing a new carriage.
Ah, you must see it, Jane. And tell me if you don't think it will suit Mrs. Rochester exactly. Oh, Jane. I wish I were a trifle better adapted to match with her externally. Can't you give me a charm or a filter or something of that sort to make me a handsome man?
It would be past the power of magic, sir.
So. Pass, Janet. Go up home and stay your weary little wandering feet at a friend's threshold.
Mr. Rochester. Thank you for your great kindness. I'm strangely glad to get back again to you. And wherever you are is my home. My only home. A fortnight of dubious calm succeeded my return to Thornfield Hall. Nothing was said of my master's marriage, and I saw no preparation going on for such an event. Never had he called me more frequently to his presence. Never been kinder to me when there. And alas, never had I loved him so well. On Midsummer Eve, I sought the garden. I made for the wicket leading to the shrubbery, and then I saw Mr. Rochester entering. I stepped aside into the ivy recess. If I sit still, he will never see me. A great moth goes humming by. It alights on a plant at Mr. Rochester's foot. He sees it and bends to examine it.
Jane, come and look at this fellow. Look at his wings. One does not often see so large and gay a night rover in England. There. He is flown. No, Jane. Turn back. Did you think I had not seen you? On so lovely a night, it is a shame to sit in the house. Thornfield is a pleasant place in summer, is it not, Jane?
Yes, sir.
You would be sorry to leave?
Yes.
Pity. That is always the way of events in this life. No sooner have you got settled in a pleasant resting place than a voice calls out to you to rise and move on.
Must I move on, sir? Must I leave Thornfield?
I believe you must, Jane. I am sorry, Janet, but I believe indeed you must.
Well, sir, I shall be ready when the order to march comes.
It has come now.
I must give it tonight.
Then you are going to be married, sir?
Exactly. Precisely. With your usual acuteness, you have hit the nail straight on the head.
Soon, sir?
Very soon, my... That is, Miss Eyre. You're not turning your head to look after Monmouth's eye. Listen to me, Jane. Adele must go to school, and you must get a new situation. I shall myself look out for employment for you.
Thank you, sir. I'm sorry.
Oh, no need to apologize. Indeed, I have already heard of a place that I think will suit in Connaught, Ireland.
It is a long way off, sir. And then the sea is a barrier.
From what, Jane?
From England. From Thornfield and...
Well?
From you, sir. It is a long way.
When friends are on the eve of separation, they like to spend the little time that remains to them close to each other. So, we sit here in peace tonight. Are you anything akin to me, do you think, Jane? Because I sometimes have a queer feeling with regard to you. It is as if I had a string somewhere under my left ribs, tightly knotted to a similar string in the corresponding quarter of your little frame. If that cord of communion was snapped, I have a nervous notion I should take to bleeding inwardly. As for you, you would forget me.
That I never should, sir. You know it.
Jane, do you hear that nightingale singing in the wood? Listen.
Oh, I wish that I'd never been born. I'd never come to Thornfield.
Because you're sorry to leave it.
I love Thornfield. I love it because I've lived in it a full and delightful life. I've not been trampled on. I've not been buried with inferior minds. I've known you, Mr. Rochester, and it strikes me with terror and anguish to feel I must be torn from you forever. I see the necessity of departure. And it is like looking on the necessity of death.
Where do you see the necessity?
Where? You, sir, have placed it before me.
In what shape?
In the shape of Miss Ingram, your bride.
My bride? What bride? I have no bride.
But you will have.
Yes, I will. I will.
Then I must go. You've said it yourself.
No, you must stay. I swear it, and the oath shall be kept.
I tell you, I must go. Do you think I can stay to become nothing to you? Do you think because I'm poor, plain and little, I'm soulless and heartless? You think wrong. And if God had gifted me with some beauty and much wealth, I should have made it as hard for you to leave me as it is now for me to leave you. I'm not talking to you through the medium of custom, of conventionalities. It is my spirit speaking to your spirit. Just as if we both passed through the grave and we stood at God's feet equal. As we are.
As we are. So, Jane, so. In my arms.
No, let go of me,
Jane,
please.
Jane, be still. Don't struggle so like a wild, frantic bird. You, my hand, my heart, and a share of all my possessions. Jane, it is only you I intend to marry.
Your bride stands between us.
My bride is here, because my equal is here in my likeness. Jane, will you marry me? Do you doubt me, Jane?
Entirely.
You have no faith in me.
None.
Am I a liar in your eyes? You shall be convinced. What love have I for Miss Ingram? None, and that you know. What love has she for me? None. As I have taken pains to prove, I caused a rumor to reach her that my fortune was not one-third of what was supposed. And since then I have had nothing but coldness from her and her mother. I would not... I could not marry Miss Ingram. You strange, you almost unearthly thing. I love you as my own flesh. You, poor and small and plain as you are, I entreat to accept me as a husband.
What? Me?
You, Jane. I must have you for my own, entirely my own. Say yes quickly.
Let me look at your face. Turn to the moonlight.
Oh, Jane, you torture me. Make haste, for I suffer. Say that you will marry me.
Are you in earnest? Do you truly love me?
You sincerely wish me to be your wife?
I do, and if an oath is necessary to satisfy you, I swear it.
Oh, and sir, I will marry you.
Oh, Jane. Oh, my little Jane. Come to me. Come to me, Natalia, now. Make my happiness, and I will make yours. Oh. God pardon me. A man meddle not with me. I have her, and I will hold her.
There is no one to meddle, sir. I have no kindred to interfere.
No, that is the best of it. Are you happy, Jane? Are you happy?
Oh, yes.
Oh, it will atone. It will atone. Is there not love in my heart and constancy in my resolves? I know my Maker sanctions what I do. For the world's judgment, I wash my hands thereof. For man's opinion, I defy it. Oh, we must go in. The weather changes. Oh, I could have sat with thee till morning, Jane.
And so could I, with you.
Quick, we must hurry in. There. You are safe indoors, Jane. Now let me take your shawl. Now, hasten to take off your wet things. But before you go, kiss me again. Oh. Good night.
Good night, sir.
Are you not afraid of the storm, Jane?
You are here, sir.
We must go. Good night. Good night again, my darling.
Good morning, Mrs. Fairfax. What a beautiful day has succeeded the storm. Such a fresh and fragrant breeze.
Good morning, Miss Eyre. Breakfast is quite ready.
And I'm indeed hungry.
Miss Eyre, I...
Yes, Mrs. Fairfax?
Miss Eyre, I feel so astonished, I hardly know what to say to you.
Hmm?
Now, can you tell me whether it is actually true that Mr. Rochester has asked you to marry him? I really thought he came in here 5 minutes ago and said that you were to be his wife.
He has said the same thing to me.
He has? Do you believe him?
Yes.
Well, I could never have thought it. He means to marry you.
He tells me so.
Is it really for love that he is going to marry you?
Oh, Mrs. Fairfax, please.
I am sorry to grieve you, but you are so young and so little acquainted with men.
Is it impossible that Mr. Rochester should have a sincere affection for me?
No, you are very well and much improved of late. And I've always noticed that you were a sort of pet of his. But gentlemen in his station are not accustomed to marry their governesses. In any case, he might almost be your father.
Indeed, Mrs. Fairfax. No one who saw us together would suppose it for an instant.
Mademoiselle, mademoiselle, Mr. Rochester, say I am to have no lesson this morning. I am to go to nursery and play with Sophie.
Does he, Adele?
And he waits to see you now, mademoiselle. At once, he said to me.
Thank you, dear. Now, run away and enjoy yourself.
Yes, mademoiselle. Sophie! Sophie, come in the door with me!
Come and kiss me good morning, Jane. Why, you look blooming and smiling and pretty. Is this my pale little elf, this sunny-faced girl with satin-smooth hair and radiant hazel eyes?
It is Jane Eyre, sir.
Soon to be Jane Rochester. In 4 weeks, Janet, not a day more, do you hear that? You blushed. Now you are white, Jane. What is that for?
Because you gave me a new name. Jane Rochester. Mm. And it seems so strange.
Young Mrs. Rochester. Fairfax Rochester's girl bride. Ah, the wedding is to take place quietly in the church down below yonder. And then
I shall waft you away at once to London, and from thence abroad with my treasure to other cities.
Shall I travel? And with you, sir?
Paris, Rome, Naples. And Jane, this morning I wrote to my banker in London to send me certain jewels he has in his keeping.
Oh, sir, never mind jewels. I would rather not have them. I am your plain Quakerish governess.
You are a beauty in my eyes. Delicate and aerial.
Puny and insignificant, you mean. Oh, you're dreaming, sir. Or you're sneering. For God's sake, don't be ironical. I don't call you handsome, sir, though I love you most dearly. Far too dearly to flatter you. Don't flatter me.
I will attire my Jane in satin and silks, and she shall have roses in her hair, and I will cover the head I love best with.
Then you won't know me, sir, and I shall not be your Jane any longer. And you need not look in that way. If you do, I wear nothing but my old Lowood frocks to the end of the chapter. I've been married in this lilac gingham, and you may make a dressing gown for yourself out of the silks, and an infinite series of waistcoats out of the satin.
Oh, it is rich to see and hear her. Is she original? Is she piquant? I never met her likeness. Oh, Jane, you master me. Ask me something now. The least thing I desire to be entreated, I...
Indeed I will. I have my petition already. Sir, have the goodness to gratify my curiosity, which is much piqued on one point.
What? Curiosity is a dangerous petition.
How stern you look now. Your eyebrows have become as thick as my finger. That will be your married look, sir, I suppose.
If that will be your married look, I, as a Christian, will soon give up the notion of consorting with a mere sprite. But what had you to ask, thing? Out with it.
You're less than civil now, and I like rudeness a great deal better than flattery. This is what I have to ask. Why did you take such pains to make me believe you wished to marry Miss Ingram?
Is that all? Oh, thank God it is no worse. Well, I feigned courtship of Miss Ingram because I wished to render you as madly in love with me as I was with you. And I knew jealousy would be the best.
Excellent. Now you are small, not one whit bigger than the end of my little finger. Oh, it was a burning shame and a scandalous disgrace to act in that way.
Were you jealous, Jane?
Never mind, Mr. Rochester. It is in no way interesting to you to know that.
Ask something more. It is my delight to be entreated and to yield.
Well, sir, I wish to go on as usual for another month.
You will give up your governessing slavery at once.
Indeed. Begging your pardon, sir, I shall not. I shall continue to act as Adele's governess. By that, I shall earn my board and lodging and £30 a year besides. I'll furnish my own wardrobe out of that money, and you shall give me nothing but...
Well, but what?
Your regard. And if I give you mine in return, that debt will be quit.
Well, for cool native impudence and pure innate pride, you haven't your equal. Will it please you to dine with me today?
No, thank you, sir.
And what for? No, thank you, if one may inquire.
I have never dined with you, sir. And I see no reason why I should now, till...
Till what? You delight in half phrases.
Till I can't help it.
Do you suppose I eat like an ogre?
I have formed no supposition on the subject, sir.
You are a provoking puppet. Come, kiss me.
No, I would rather be excused.
Hard little thing. Any other woman would have been melted to the marrow.
Oh, I assure you, sir. I am naturally very hard. Very flinty.
Will you be quiet and talk rationally? To your room, Janet. And put on your bonnet, for I mean you to accompany me to Millcote this morning. Go, you malicious elf, and hurry, for I cannot be long without you.
The hour spent at Millcote was somewhat harassing. Mr. Rochester ordered me to choose half a dozen dresses. I reduced the half dozen to two. He fixed on a rich silk of the most brilliant amethyst dye and a superb pink satin. With infinite difficulty, I persuaded him to make an exchange in favor of a sober black satin and a pearl-gray silk. Glad I was to get him out of the silk warehouse and then out of a jeweler's shop. The more he bought me, the more my cheek burned with a sense of annoyance and degradation.
As we re-entered the carriage, I suddenly remembered my uncle's letter to Mrs. Reed and his intention to adopt me. It would indeed be a relief, I thought, if I had ever so small an independency. I would write to Madeira the moment I got home and tell my uncle I was going to be married, and to whom. And so the month of courtship passed, until its last hours were being numbered. And then something happened which I could not comprehend, and I had at heart a strange and anxious thought. No one knew or had seen the event but myself. It had taken place when Mr. Rochester had been absent from home on business. And now the eve of his return was come, the eve of our wedding day.
Do you remember, Jane, you promised to wake with me the night before my wedding?
I did. And I will keep my promise, for a little while at least. I have no wish to go to bed.
And on my part, likewise. We leave Thornfield tomorrow within half an hour after our return from church.
Very well, sir.
Jane, with what an extraordinary smile you said that. How strangely your eyes glitter. Are you well?
I believe I am.
Believe? What is the matter? Tell me what you feel.
I could not, sir.
Give me your confidence, Jane. What do you fear? That I shall not prove a good husband?
It is the idea farthest from my thoughts.
You puzzle me, Jane. Tell me.
Then, sir, listen. When you were from home, last night Sophie called me upstairs to look at my wedding dress which had just come. And there I found also the veil which you in your princely extravagance sent for from London. Ill resolved, I suppose, since I would not have jewels, to cheat me into accepting something as costly.
How well you read me, you witch. Did you find poison or a dagger there also that you look so mournful now?
No, sir, but listen. For some time after I went to bed, I could not sleep. And when eventually I was able to, I was burdened with terrible dreams.
Oh, forget them. Think only of real happiness. Do you love me, Jane?
I do, sir. I do with my whole heart. And I think it a glorious thing to have the hope of living with you. Because I love you.
Oh, Jane, it is strange, but that sentence has penetrated my breast painfully. Look, wicked Janet, as you know well how to look. Tell me you hate me, tease me, vex me, or do anything but move me.
I will tease you and vex you to your heart's content when I've finished my tale.
What? Is there more?
Yes, sir. Suddenly I was awakened. A gleam dazzled my eyes. I thought Sophie or Lear had come in. And then my blood crept cold through my veins. Mr. Rochester, this was no Sophie. It was not Lear. It was not Mrs. Fairfax. It was not even that strange woman, Grace Poole.
It must have been one of them.
No, sir.
Did you see her face?
Yes. Fearful. Ghastly. Oh, sir, I never saw a face like it. It was a discolored face. It was a savage face.
Ghosts are usually pale, Jane.
This, sir, was purple. The lips were swelled and dark. The brow furrowed.
What did it do?
It took my veil from its place, held it up, gazed at it long, then threw it over its own head and turned to the mirror.
And then?
Tore it off. Rent it in two parts and flinging both on the floor, trampled on them.
And afterwards?
Just at my bedside, she stopped. A fiery eye glared upon me. She thrust up her candle close to my face and extinguished it under my eyes. I was aware her lurid visage flamed over mine. And I lost consciousness. For the second time in my life, only the second time, I became insensible from terror.
Who was with you when you revived?
No one, sir, but the broad day. Now, sir, Tell me who and what that woman was.
The creature of an overstimulated brain, that is certain. No, I must be careful of you, my treasure. Nerves like yours were not made for rough handling.
My nerves were not in fault. The thing was real.
And your previous dreams, were they real too? No, no, Janet.
But, sir, on rising in the morning, there on the carpet, I saw the veil torn from top to bottom in two halves.
Oh, Jane. God, that if anything malignant did come near you last night, it was only the veil that was harmed. Oh, to think what might have happened.
But, sir, can you not tell me?
Yes, Janet, I'll explain to you all about it. That woman must have been Grace Poole. You call her a strange being, and with reason. What did she do to me? What to Mason?
Then, sir, why do you...
Why do I keep such a woman in my house? When we have been married a year and a day, I will tell you, but not now. Are you satisfied, Jane? Do you accept my solution of the mystery?
Well, yes, sir. Yes, I am relieved.
Come, let me light your candle. Tell me, does not Sophie sleep with Adele in the nursery?
Yes, sir.
And there is room enough in Adele's little bed for you. You must share it with her tonight, Jane. Promise me to go to the nursery.
I shall be very glad
to do so,
sir.
And fasten the door securely on the inside. Now, no more somber thoughts. Look, it is a lovely night. Well, how is my Janet now?
The night is serene, sir. And so am I.
And you will not dream of sorrow, but of happy love. Blissful union.
Sophie came at 7 to dress me. She was just fastening my veil, a plain square of blonde hastily procured, when Mr. Rochester, impatient of my delay, called up from below.
Jane! Jane, hasten!
I'm coming, sir. I am ready now.
Lingerer, my brain is on fire with impatience, and you tarry so long. Come. Let me look at you. Ah, fair as a lily, not only the pride of my life, but the desire of my eyes. Now, Janet, sit here and eat what breakfast you can.
Yes, sir.
Leah, is John getting the carriage ready?
Yes, sir.
Is the luggage brought down?
They are bringing it down, sir. And Mr. Wood sends to say he's in the vestry, sir, putting on his surplice.
And the clerk?
John Green is there too, sir. And the horses are harnessing.
Well, we shall not want the carriage to go to church, but it must be ready the moment we return.
Yes, sir.
Jane, are you ready?
I rose. There were no groomsmen, no bridesmaids, no relatives. None but Mr. Rochester and I. We entered the quiet and humble church. The priest waited in his white surplice at the lowly altar, the clerk beside him. All was still. Two shadows only moved in a remote corner. The service began.
I require and charge you both, as ye will answer at the dreadful day of judgment, when the secrets of all hearts shall be disclosed, that if either of you know any impediment why ye may not lawfully be joined together in holy matrimony, ye do now confess it. For ye be well assured that so many as are coupled together otherwise than God's word doth allow are not joined together by God, neither is their matrimony lawful. Wilt thou have this woman for thy wedded wife?
The marriage cannot go on. I declare the existence of an impediment.
Proceed.
But I cannot proceed, Mr. Rochester, without some investigation into what has been asserted.
I am in a condition to prove my allegation.
But what is the nature of the impediment? Perhaps it may be got over, explained away.
Hardly. It consists of the existence of a previous marriage. Mr. Rochester has a wife now living.
Who are you?
My name is Briggs, a solicitor of London.
And you would trust on me a wife? Favor me with an account of her? With her name, her parentage, her place of abode?
Certainly. I have a statement here. I affirm and can prove that Edward Fairfax Rochester of Thornfield Hall, England, was married to my sister, Bertha Antoinetta Mason, daughter of Jonas Mason, merchant, and of Antoinetta, his wife, a Creole, at Spanish Town, Jamaica. The record of the marriage will be found in the register of that church. A copy of it is now in my possession, signed Richard Mason.
That, if a genuine document does not prove that the woman mentioned therein as my wife is still living.
She was living 3 months ago.
How do you know?
I have a witness to the fact.
Produce him, or go to hell.
Mr. Mason, have the goodness to step forward.
You, Mason.
Good God, Fairfax, don't look at me like that.
What have you to say?
Mr. Mason, are you aware whether or not this gentleman's wife is still living?
Courage. Speak out, Mr. Mason.
She is now living at Thornfield Hall. I saw her there last April. I am her brother.
At Thornfield Hall? Impossible. I am an old resident in their neighborhood, sir, and I have never heard of a Mrs. Rochester at Thornfield Hall.
No. By God. I took care that none should hear of it, or of her under that name. Enough, gentlemen, my plan is broken up. What this lawyer and his client say is true. I have been married, and the woman to whom I was married lives. But she is mad. She comes of a mad family, idiots and maniacs through 3 generations. Yes. I found that out after I had wed, but they were silent on family secrets before. Close your book and take off your surplice. There will be no wedding today. Come, all of you, follow. I invite you to my house to visit Grace Poole's patient and my wife. Now, enter, all of you.
Fairfax, for heaven's sake.
Yes, you know this place, Mason. She bit and stabbed you here. Good morrow, Mrs. Poole.
Why, sir, what are you...
Yes, you have visitors today. How are you? How is your charge?
Very tolerable, sir, thank you. Rather snappish, but not outrageous. Oh, sir, she's teasing. You better not...
Only a few moments, Grace.
Oh, no, Fairfax, no.
Be silent, Richard, stop snipping.
One cannot tell when it be so human. I could never have imagined anything so terrible. A nightmare. A nightmare.
Don't go too near, Mr. Rochester, sir. Take care. For God's sake,
keep
take care.
Keep out of the way, Mrs. Poole. She has no knife now, I suppose. I'm on my guard.
Oh, one never knows what she has, sir. She's so cunning.
Oh, we better leave her there.
Oh, go to the devil, Richard. Behind me, Jane. Wood.
She's safe. Stop right.
Never fear. I can manage. Give me that cord. Now, bind that to the chair while I hold up. There.
Gentlemen, that is my wife. And this is what I wish to have. This young girl who stands so grave and quiet at the mouth of hell. Wood and Briggs, look at the difference. Compare these clear eyes with those yonder, this face with that mask, this form with that bulk. Then, judge me, priest of the gospel and man of the law, and remember with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. Off with you now. Leave me to shut up my prize.
Madam, a word with you.
Yes, Mr. Briggs. You are cleared from all blame. Your uncle will be glad to hear of it from Mr. Mason when he returns to Madeira.
My uncle? Do you know him?
Mr. Mason here does. Mr. Eyre has been the Funchal correspondent of his house for some years. When your uncle received your letter intimating the contemplated union between yourself and Mr. Rochester, Mr. Mason, astonished and distressed, as you may suppose, revealed the real state of matters.
Your uncle, I am sorry to say, is very ill at the moment, Miss Eyre.
Indeed, were I not morally certain that he will be dead ere you reach Madeira, I would advise you to accompany Mr. Mason back. But as it is, I think you had better remain in England.
That is, until you can hear further, either from or of Mr. Eyre.
Yes. Yes. Well, have we anything else to stay for, Mr. Mason?
No. No. Let us be gone.
I went to my room and shut myself in. I leaned my arms on a table and my head dropped on them. Till this moment, I had only heard, seen, moved. But now I thought. The whole consciousness of my life lost, my love lost, my hope quenched, my faith death-struck, swayed full and mighty above me in one sullen mass. The waters came into my soul. I sank in deep mire. The floods overflowed me.